Hi guys, Martin here. Before we start the show, I just wanted to let you know that we are going to spoil Marvel's Iron Fist. Enjoy the show.
Say it's a special one.
Let's do something special.
It's a regular special episode.
A special regular episode.
So welcome to Asteroids in Exile. I'm Niv.
I'm Martin.
And this is our regular special episode about Iron Fist.
The newest Netflix Marvel show.
The Last Defender has shown up, and this is the first time we're going to talk about it, right? So we actually haven't shared any thoughts about it before this.
Oh yeah, you told me not to overhype it, or you helped me not to overhype it in the last episode, the last regular episode we did.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the first time we're talking about it since we've both seen it, right? Yeah. So before that, just to set the stage, you were super excited. You were like, this is going to be so cool. You were all about it.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't know.
I
was still excited, but I was just not so excited as you are.
Yeah.
And then, like, we had the last episode maybe like 3 weeks ago
the beginning of March.
And in that time, all these news reports started coming in about the early reviews for Iron Fist, and they were pretty bad.
Mm.
So talk me through what you were feeling as all that was happening.
You know, I felt bad. I didn't read most of the reviews past the first sentence or paragraph. And then the whole debacle with Finn Jones trying to defend casting decisions, which isn't his job, isn't his job. And I think I mentioned this somewhere, that all the guys who are upset because of the casting choices should talk to the producers and the casting directors and not to Finn Jones, or not be as harsh to him, because the guy did his job.
Yeah.
And he didn't lead. Oh man, he's not working in a concentration camp or anything. It's Iron Fist.
Yeah. In terms of, like, I guess you can say the seriousness of, like, what was going on.
And I mean, he should. It wouldn't have hurt him to take the piss, so to say.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I'm with you on the fact that, look, he's just the actor. He got hired to play the role.
Yep.
He didn't produce the show. He's not one of the showrunners or executives. He was just put in that place, and I guess it can kind of is a bit awkward for him as well. Because he owns the character to an extent, I can understand that he has a feeling that he has to defend.
Yeah.
He has to defend himself being there, which is a very awkward situation to be in. But it never really works out. I mean, because it was very similar with Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One, right? So,
and there's an interesting article on Bleeding Cool that I read before we started this episode about how the outrage about... about Iron Fist is even bigger than the Ancient One, and Doctor Strange, although it's people seem to come into my camp of seeing the magic trick behind Doctor Strange and reevaluating the movie.
Well, that is one of the things, is that Doctor Strange at least got critical acclaim in the end, so people can kind of look past the casting and all the kind of flips that they made, just because it was turned out to be a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Now, that's a good segue then. What did you think of Iron Fist after seeing it? Like, overall high-level review.
I like it. It's not...
You don't have to be so apologetic about that.
You can like it,
that's fine.
It's not what I anticipated it to be, but it's something else. The things that I like work largely on a meta scale, because essentially it's a show about loss and how to deal with loss, and how everybody could do better with a bit of therapy and talk about their problems. the fight scenes and choreographies aren't that great, but then I've heard like Finn Jones had 15 minutes of rehearsal before a fight scene and then they moved on. The production was pretty rushed.
Wow.
You know, but overall it could have been so much more, but it's not the worst case scenario that people make it out to be.
It really got a bad rap because they only released the first 6 episodes for the early reviews.
Yeah.
And to me, that's where a lot of the problems with the show are. Like, the first 4 episodes, to me, are pointless. So the show starts off with him trying to get back Rand Corporation, right? And his journey and how he does that. And it's just boring, you know? Like, I think structurally there's massive issues with the way the show was put together. I think overall, the story was pretty good. You know, they tried the story itself in terms of overall, in terms of Danny Rand versus the bad guy and the Iron Fist and the hand and all that. That overarching story was pretty good. It's just the way they executed the story and where they decided to spend time was, I think, where the show let itself down.
Yeah.
The directing sometimes in some of the episodes was just a little bit weak.
Yeah.
I thought the fight choreography, like you said, should have been so much more. I mean, this was supposed to be your kung fu action defender.
Absolutely.
And there really was a lot of space to improve the fighting.
And the scripts and dialogues lacked as well, because some dialogues are like, I did that. What, you did that? Yeah, I did that. I will do this. You will do this? Yes, I will do this.
So let's go through all the negatives then, because I think this is probably how we should structure this one, right? Okay. Is talk about all the negative stuff, what we didn't like about it, and then maybe finish off with what we liked.
Okay.
Because there was things to like as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So overall, to me, look, it was the most mediocre one off the bunch in terms of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage. One of the things to me was that each of those shows had kind of like an identity. You know, they had a confidence and they knew what they were about. This one didn't. This one felt like a little bit all over the place. It was kind of very bland and beige. Even the cinematography, it was like, I saw it in HDR. So it looked good on the screen, but there was nothing about what they were showing me on the screen that made it look like a film or a movie.
Yeah.
It was just like, it's like if you gave film students really good equipment and told them to go out and do a film, that's kind of how the first couple of episodes kind of watched, you know? Like you said, bad script, bad weak directing. The cinematography was kind of just bland, you know? They just kind of like went to a location and shot there. The lighting was just washed out all over the place. Didn't really do anything interesting with that. So I really didn't enjoy those first couple episodes just for those kinds of reasons. And also there was a lot of potential with the story that they missed out on, like you said. So it's interesting in how you and I kind of interpret it. Like you said, it's all about dealing with loss.
Yeah.
Which is true, right? So he loses his parents at a young age, and then comes back to try to get that legacy back for them and sort of reclaim his, what is technically, you can say, rightfully his. From my point of view, it's also about identity. Danny Rand is caught between the two worlds, the world of New York City and everything that his life was before the accident, and then the world of Kunlun. And it's that yin and that yang, that push and pull on him, which is a part of the great tension of the show. But the show doesn't really realize that. Like I said, like at the start, it doesn't deal with that at all. Like he comes in and he's so naive and he's just so excited about getting the company back and all this sort of stuff, but you don't really know why. You don't know what the stakes are. Why does he need it so bad, you know? And he almost doesn't express any real reason except for my name's on the door, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, well, he's just a spot rich kid then. I don't really care. Moving on, you know? Whereas as we go towards the end of the show and the stakes become more about his, who am I? Am I the Iron Fist or am I Danny Rand? And that identity crisis becomes more urgent. That's when I think the show gets better, because that's a more interesting story than just a rich kid trying to get his father's company back. So, I mean, that's the way I interpreted it, which is interesting because I didn't really go down the like I didn't feel the loss angle as much.
Okay, well, if you take Danny's story, for example, I think all the characters deal with loss. And, in Danny's case, he comes from this protected background. Suddenly he gets the rock pulled out from under him, and he lands in Kunlun. And his father was a businessman. He was raised around businessmen, business people, and the mechanism he was taught to deal with that loss was look for a high position among in this new situation that you're in. And he learns of the Iron Fist, and that's the super executive job with the office with the great view of the mountains, and he tries to fill to suppress the anger and fill the void that he has because of the loss of his parents with that power. And then he gets to the super executive office, and the loss is still there and the anger is still there, and he thinks, yeah, well, yeah, he interpreted the eagle as the sign to perhaps do something new. And then he gets to New York, and he thinks, okay, if I can reclaim the company, perhaps that will fill the void in me. And there's this scene when he sits in his father's office, and you kind of realize, okay, I've reached the next goal on my checklist, but I'm still empty. I'm still not over the death of my parents. And that's a great thing about that those first few episodes, especially in the mental health arc in the second episode, that the doctor and even Claire at the end of the series says, you need help, and it's with every character. Ward has the need for love in him. Joy needs to Joy t took the wrong direction somewhere in her life, and she's slowly discovering that there's a hole in her that she also tries to fix with her father's pretend love. And then you have Colleen, who also found meaning in her occupation as a trainer for a certain organization, and later also gets the rock pull. And then you have Davos, one of the most tragic figures in the whole series, because he came to terms with his friend gaining the super executive position that he wanted, because you have the scene where he visits him in the mountain. And they really managed to pull off this genuine friendship. There's a point at which Davos can overcome his jealousy to a certain degree because of the way he was raised in Kunlun, and he respects Danny for what he is. He is the protector, and he's his friend as well. And this betrayal at the end, instead of the two sitting down and having a talk man to man, they fight it out. And that's the thing the series, in my opinion, does really well: portray loss. And also because people are complaining about the bad approximation of Eastern culture, and I think the show does a great job of portraying how we witness Eastern culture in the West, because Danny, with all his Zen sayings, he's reciting them. He didn't understand anything they
Yeah, that's a
taught
great
him
point.
in Kunlun. And it's that the scene when they leave the press meeting where he gets reinstated in the company, you really feel the clashing of the philosophies, because Ward and Joy are holding on. They hold the company with an iron fist, while Danny is open to every character, or to every person in the show, to Big L, to Simon, I think, in the psychiatric ward, he opens up to those people. He's willing to come at the situation with an open hand and to get hurt and to lose something.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, he's just...
That's really really convinced me, let me tell you.
You know, at no, the end, I think he's just a pseudo spiritual hipster with a black credit card who's teaching minimalism. But he realizes it at the end when Kunlun is gone that he has nothing left. There's nothing left. He has to, as you say, he has to come to terms with his identity crisis because he doesn't have his company anymore. He doesn't have Kunlun anymore. What is left of him except of the Iron Fist? I think even if the cinematography is bad, that last shot when he ignites the hand, I think that's, for me, that's when he realizes, okay, all I have left is the Iron Fist and I have to make something of it. Now I have to reevaluate everything I have been taught. And internalize it. And I'm sorry that I cut you off.
No. But it is almost like he only realizes it once it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, which is what happens in the end as well. And it's a great analogy, I think, with his, you know, just going back to what you were saying before, his openness compared to the Iron Fist.
Yeah,
pun intended or not, the Iron Fist of Ward and Joy in terms of how they control the company and how they defend and protect the company with an Iron Fist, just as he should be defending and protecting Kunlun at the start. But, you know, and I think that's a great analogy. You know, maybe it's worth to like sort of rewatch it. And here's another funny one. With an openness instead of judgment, which is maybe why I was like, okay, this is gonna be shit. I'm just gonna watch it and see what I like about it. You know,
no, I'm absolutely on that boat because, yeah, the show isn't the high point of the Marvel cinematic universe, TV universe.
Yeah, but you know, the other thing that I really liked, I think, flipping to the more positive now. I think Finn Jones actually did a pretty good job, I think, as Danny Rand. As Iron Fist, meh, because, you know, if he only had 15 minutes to do the fight scenes, like in terms of preparation, I think that's a really good job then. But I really wanted, I mean, this whole show, I think all the action kind of sucked. So I would, whoever did the choreography, I would really fire them. There's an article on The Verge today about season 2 of Into the Badlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a show I mentioned. I talked about it in season 1 of our podcast, last year. And the action there is just, I mean, it's over-the-top action. It's like wire work and everything. But I really wanted Iron Fist to be taking that to the next level. You know, I wanted it to be some next-level kung fu.
Yeah.
And what really frustrated me was every time there was a fight scene, Danny Rand was kind of crappy. Like, he was the most inefficient fighter, you know? Like, I really wanted him. He was supposed to be the best of Kunlun, right? Because he fought his way up to the top, and he was able to face the dragon to become the Iron Fist.
Yes.
Whereas he was fighting off against, like, hand-foot soldiers, and they were, like, kicking his ass sometimes. And you're like, come on, you're supposed to be the best. And so, you know, I really wanted more from that. So it's, you know... Not so much like a kung fu action show. Like, I wouldn't watch it again for the fight scenes.
No.
Which is sad, because it's the kind of show where you're supposed to watch it for the fight scenes. It's like watching a Bruce Lee movie and fast-forwarding through all the action, you know? That's kind of what it should have been. As in, it should have been like a Bruce Lee movie where you kind of want to re-watch those fight scenes because they're so awesome. But what I really liked, you know, in terms of Finn Jones' portrayal of Danny Rand is just the naivety and the innocence and even like the airy open hipsterness of him at the start. That was really refreshing. It was almost like he'd lived through that trauma when he was 10 years old and he'd lived for 15 years in Kunlun. But when he comes back, he's still kind of like a teenager.
Yeah.
He's just still so naive and kind of just has such like a childlike approach to the way he tries to get things done. That was kind of fun. You know, I thought that was cool. It wasn't frustrating because some, you know, some people may get frustrated by characters on screen making bad decisions. But I thought, you know, there was an air of like naivety and innocence about it, which I thought was really cool. As the character progressed, though, he just kind of started getting angrier and angrier. And it's almost like, where did that anger come from?
Yep.
Because it wasn't really there in the start, which is why it was a little bit jarring as he became. Because as you mentioned, he never really got over that loss. And he's always been trying to reclaim that position, right? And that's all fueled by that anger. But it kind of shows up a little bit, like in the end, it gets worse and worse and worse. Yep. And so interesting to see that character develop like that. Yeah, I mean, I prefer Danny Rand at the start than at the end, because at the end he was kind of like, he's going to turn into the Hulk eventually, you know, it's just angry all the time.
All the time. And I think a big problem with the characterization is that there wasn't a flashback arc or episode like the other shows had around episode 5 or 6. I mean, the way they did their flashback in the tournament to get the daughter of the drug designer back was an interesting one, where he gets the visions of the Thunderer. That was an interesting way to do it, but perhaps, you know, that short scene of the monks bashing him with the bamboo sticks.
Yeah,
that just wasn't enough
to show his training and show what he went through.
Yeah, because the naivety, because he also talks about earning the money to get into the US by performing in fight clubs.
Yeah,
and something like that. And it would have been interesting to see that journey, because I think he was a much more stern. Yes, stern character in the time in Kunlun, and being outside of Kunlun transforms back into his 15-year-old self, because that's the only mode he's been in the real world before entering Kunlun, and so transforms back into his 10-year-old old self.
Yeah, it would have been... It would have been good to show more of that development, because the character didn't feel fully fleshed out. He felt a little bit inconsistent.
Yeah.
And I think putting those things in place would have helped draw out and flesh out the character a bit more. It's interesting you mentioned the flashbacks, because yeah, it was really cool to see the Thunderer, who was his trainer effectively in Kudlun, show up as kind of like that kind of like a mirage. It was kind of like hallucination that he saw, but that also didn't go anywhere, because he kind of shows up and kind of like says some stuff and tries to prod him along, but even in the end of the story, it didn't help him get to where he needed to get to, I think. They should have had that hallucination show up a bit more and kind of like help push the character over whatever edge he needed to get to complete his mission.
Yeah, because I felt like that's going to be a thing from now on, like in episode 5 when he first appears to him. I thought, oh yeah, they're going to have some mind meetings, mm-hmm. which would have been great, because at least in the comics, Lei Kung adopts him. So he is kind of the surrogate father. Would have been interesting to... Even if they kept the flashbacks out of that, you could have fleshed out life in Kunlun.
Yeah, which was sad, because we didn't get to see any of that, right? I mean, every time they did a flashback, it's like some random esoteric Danny on a mountain meditating. And that kind of added nothing to who was he in Kunlun, you know? He tells one story about stealing moonshine, I think, you know? And that was... That was nice. It was good to hear that there was a life that he had in Kunlun that we can hear about. It would have been great to sort of see more of that, because, again, with that, with that push and pull between his identity and should he be fighting for Kunlun or should he be fighting for Danny Rand and his previous life, it shows you what the stakes are for Kunlun. Like, why is it worth saving? Or is it not worth saving? If all he knew there was like mistreatment and abuse in the way that he was trained, maybe that's just cause for him to say, you know what? I don't want to defend Kunlun. Yep. I'd rather get back to the nostalgic memories of my family and like reclaim that part of myself, because Kunlun only gave me pain. But that was never really explored as well. Like he said, you know, there were some good times, but mostly it was bad. And so why, you know, that's a great motivation for not defending Kunlun as the Iron Fist and abandoning his post as the Iron Fist. Because, like, it's also supposed to be, what do they call it? One of the seven cities of heaven?
Yeah, one of the seven capital cities of heaven, yeah.
Yeah, so...
which is amazing.
How can the capital city of heaven be a place of pain and abuse? This is what I need to know, you know?
You know, I think the parallel that they are drawing in their portrayal is a Buddhist monastery.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it feels, at least in my opinion, it feels like it's always easy if you're shutting yourself out from the rest of the world to be at peace.
Yeah.
And I think we can only judge from Davos and the things he says about the society. It seems Kunlun seems to be operating under a strict societal rule. Everybody has its place. Mm-hmm. Everybody abides to the rules, and I think it's the same with real life Buddhist monasteries. They're shutting themselves off and are operating under very strict under a very strict rule set to keep the philosophy working. They enforce inner peace rather than truly achieving it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be two people who don't really know much about Buddhism,
yeah,
at that level discussing this.
Yeah, but that's how it feels to me.
Yeah, to your point, you know, I think a large part of it is detachment from the material world, right? And so I think the extreme, or potentially like what the way that's being played out in Kunlun, that detachment is actually disengagement from the outside world. So Kunlun exists inside a bubble. And even inside that bubble, there's smaller bubbles. Everyone lives, like, there's no sense of, I don't know, this is an interesting one, except for the Iron Fist, but the hierarchy exists to prevent people from having to worry about climbing the hierarchy, if that makes any sense. As in, like, once you know what your position is, you can be happy with that and just focus inward. Because it's about getting to your next spiritual level rather than your next social level. And this is all just, we're just talking out of our
ass.
We don't really know, right?
But it would have been, you know, if they showed us Kunlun in the way they portrayed Asgard or all the other places, that Kunlun truly is, could be interpreted as heaven, as this perfect city where everybody is happy. You know, the kids get beaten because they chose the path to defend the happiness of the other people. You know, they talk about how the hand is a threat, but to what is it a threat? To Kunlun, but what is actually there that they are threatening?
Yeah,
just mentioning heaven. That's why they should have done flashback episodes. Backflash.
Yeah, I mean, they should have backflashed because we didn't get a sense of what Kunlun was and why it was worth defending. You know, and I think that's going back to the original point we were talking about before. It wasn't real. Kunlun, even to the viewer, even to the audience, was a bit of a mirage, and it was unknowable. And they kept on saying that, you know. But, you know, even the hand, we don't get to a clear example of what the hand is either. Like, what do they stand for? We know that there's factions of the hand, and there's good factions I'm saying with quotes,
yeah,
and bad factions, but you know, both that is such an esoteric fight, in the sense of we don't really know what they were fighting over, even. And it was interesting as well, is that the hand soldiers that he deals with always say that you've been told something your whole life and you're just believing that party line, but you don't know. You've been lied to. You've been brainwashed. And the same could be said the other way, you know? So, and as the audience, even we can't know the truth because we don't know both sides. I mean, we know enough about the hand to know that they're bad. But is Kunlun actually good after the only flashbacks we've seen is them beating up little kids?
Yeah.
So.
But I think the whole faction hand thing was stupid in my opinion. It would have been enough if I forgot his name. But I always called him Poe Dameron in my Iron Fist diary. if Poe Dameron just waged open war against Madame Gao instead of having a subsection of the hand, which feels that the hand felt very, it didn't feel as threatening as it was in the second season of Daredevil.
Yeah, and now you've got to ask yourself, which hand was that?
Yeah.
Was that Madame Gao's hand, or was that Poe Dameron's hand? You know, you know, which faction was that actually had the assault on the hospital and stuff like that? Because yeah, that's different. So we don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they explain it and I missed it, but I can't, you know, you can't place it. So why didn't they have open warfare? I think it was also, it could have been that the show and like the world that they were creating were trying to cause a point of difference with the hand versus like the League of Shadows.
Yeah.
So we've seen that in like the Batman Begins movie. And in, you know, obviously that's the DC universe where the League exists as this entity that is trying to destroy everything in order to rebuild it, in order to save it.
Yeah.
And they're highly organized, you know, Ra's al Ghul's at the top and they'll do whatever he says. And actually the League of Shadows was in, it's in Arrow as well, right?
So yeah,
it's quite a well-known concept now. Whereas here they tried to be different by saying, oh, now we've got factions within the bad guy organization.
It was already creepy with showing the compound where the recruits are get the final brainwashing.
Yeah, the kind of college campus.
Yeah, and integrating that into the hand mythology, or into the how the hand operates in the US would have been enough. And to say that Baku, I think Baku was his name, has some, I don't know, he can't, compromising material on Madame Gao, that would have been enough, and that he can threaten her by giving the material to a council or something like that, that she's not fit to be in her place of power anymore and he should overtake it. I think that would have been much more interesting than to see a rival organization within the criminal organization that's siphons of money, of rent enterprises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you mean that could almost have been painted kind of like an organized crime, like mafia families, you know?
Yeah.
So Madame Gao's looking after the illicit drug trade and all of the other illicit trades, whereas Baku is looking after the next set of things, which is like, it's almost like white collar crime embezzlement, and also investigating, you know, on the side, the Iron Fist and things like that. So, because there is a larger story happening with the hand, right? I mean, the whole Defenders thing, which they didn't really point to what's going to happen next. What's going to bring them all back together? Because in Daredevil season 2, there was that sarcophagus thing.
Yeah.
There was all the kids who were brainwashed and giving their blood to create or wake up something. And we never got to see any more of that. And it wasn't, they didn't further that plot line.
No, they just put Elektra in the sarcophagus, I think.
Yeah. So, and she was also some sort of storm child or something. Like, I forgot what special designation they gave her. but they didn't further that any. And that was Madame Gao's organization, wasn't it? Like, was it? We don't know, because Madame Gao was heavily involved in a lot of the other hand storylines.
There was some other immortal guy that Stick decapitated at the end.
Mm. Yeah, it's, I mean, and so we don't, I mean, we still don't know, right? But I think maybe what you're saying and what I'm trying to say as well is it'll be would have been really good for Iron Fist to crack open the organization and actually lay it bare so we know how it works. Because even if it was different factions of the hand fighting against each other, that would have been, that's almost like a Game of Thrones type situation. If there's a power struggle within the organization, there's a whole lot of drama. That's the Sopranos, you know? It's like, that would have been cool to see played out as well. And then how they've got as an organization, there's this big overall plan that they've got, and they all should be working towards. But even though they're all working towards an overall plan, there's different factions fighting for power within even that. So it's kind of like Sopranos, Sons of Anarchy, you know, different gangs fighting each other over territory and who's going to be in control at the end. And like a coup that's happening within the hand itself. And then Iron Fist kind of reveals, and so it makes sense to us. So by the time we get to the Defenders, we know very clearly what this fight's going to be about. At the moment, when the Defenders finally does come, we're going to have to ramp up and learn everything again. The only thing we'll know is who the heroes are. We won't know who the bad guy is and what they're fighting for, which is a difference with what they're doing in the cinematic universe. With they've laid out the Infinity Stones, we all know that Thanos is going to get them, and then we're all going to have to gang up against Thanos. You know, like they've already laid out at least that much of the foundation, so that when we finally do have that fight, it'll make sense and we'll know where it's coming from. Because the only thing that I think is gonna make the Defenders a little bit cheap, I guess you can say, and to kind of make it feel TV, is when Elektra does come out of the sarcophagus, she's gonna be some kind of super bad guy. She's not gonna be the one that's in charge. She's not gonna be the one calling the shots. I'm pretty sure she's gonna come out as some sort of like doomsday type creature. And that's only going to be towards the end, and that's going to be like the fight at the end. And so we're going to wait this whole time, just like Iron Fist. So that one scene in the trailers when he punches the ground and he like levels the floor of the building, waited for that all season, and it happened at the very end, you know? So like his use of the Iron Fist was generally kind of meh. I thought what he should have, I mean, what I would have want, what I wanted to see is I wanted to see him use the Iron Fist and then escalate the way he uses the Iron Fist every couple of episodes. Like bring out a new trick that the Iron Fist can do. Because we only really saw him use it to punch things.
Yeah, but you know that's also the big problem in the comics too, because that's pretty much all he does. I mean, he later learns that he can transfer his chi into objects, but that's it. You know, the focus with Danny Rand lies rather on his martial arts skills, and the Iron Fist is the last resort, or when he's in a corner.
Well, so maybe that's why the fighting is so bad, because they always have to get him into a corner so
Corner,
he can use the Iron Fist. Because it's almost like an encounter power, you know? He can only use it once every half an hour, and he has to go recharge his chi. I don't know. I wanted him to go Avatar state, you know, to be fair. That's what I was waiting for. I wanted him to go completely chi and just kind of destroy everything.
Yeah, and I thought that we'd get that at the end because we see the guy in the footage, the former Iron Fist, with both hands glowing, or with both fists glowing. And I thought we'd at least get that at the end.
I don't know what, you know, I don't
I
know.
mean, I
I don't know. I there's more. I think that's the thing. It's like the overall review for Iron Fist for me is I just wanted more. Like I didn't mind watching more episodes. Like I was kind of sad when it was ending because I was like, actually, this is like I want to see more. It's just that it was kind of plateauing in terms of its level of urgency and where Iron Fist was going with his powers at the end.
And that's the interesting things. Those 2 to 3 episodes that Jessica Jones had too much of, Iron Fist could have needed.
So, all right. Well, there you go. I mean, it's kind of like in an unsteady place now, leading up to the Defenders, you know, because I mean, we're still gonna be interested in to see what happens and how they all come together. But the quality of the story and the quality of the overall arc of where they were going is kind of like, is it not going to be as great as we were expecting?
Yeah. And I think the problem is because the only element they share is Claire at the moment. Because the only two guys that met were Jessica Jones and Luke Cage.
Yeah.
In that thing. And I think they should have at least set up something with Luke Cage in this series. I mean, set up something like that with the letter and the t-shirt that Claire's pouring out to Danny. But they should have at least met.
Well, we don't know. Like, Luke Cage went off to his hometown, right? So he's off investigating and doing something else.
Oh, he's in jail.
He's in jail?
He's in jail at the moment. He got incarcerated. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He gets taken to his hometown.
Really? Yeah.
By, like, state troopers or something. Yeah, I think I'm kind of half-minded about whether they should have had other characters in the individual character stories. I think Jessica Jones and Luke Cage worked well together just because of the way they played out that story. But I almost didn't want Daredevil to show up and help because, the character, the hero, needs to overcome his own obstacles.
Of course.
Yeah. What would have been interesting, though, is as Daredevil comes from a bit of a martial arts fighting background, trained by Stick, is he could have offered advice to Danny Rand and helped him in this very similar way to the way Arrow kind of shows up and helps Flash in the early days.
Yeah.
And they kind of like just have that, it's not a man-to-man talk, I guess you can say, but it's a, it's kind of like it shows that there's a level of friendship there. And it starts laying the foundations for the trust that he's going to have to come later on when they all work together. So
yeah, that would have been neat.
That would have been interesting. I think Claire was used very interestingly in the show.
Yes.
I mean, I actually, half the time I was like, why is she even there? Like, she flies to China with them.
Yeah.
And then she's like, you know what? I'm just going to wait in the car.
In the car,
like,
yeah.
Why'd you come? you know, you could have waited in the car in Brooklyn. No point in you being here if you're just going to wait in the car. So I thought that was stupid. Plus, I don't even know how they went to China and then returned with Madame Gao. Like, how do they get her through customs? It's like there are some really stupid decisions in the script. Like,
he lost his place in the company while in China. So how did they get her back? Because the jet doesn't need to carry Mr. Rand anymore.
How do they even get visas to show up in China, first of all?
Yeah.
Because, that's like a process. They need to go to the embassy and apply for a visa. And then be able to smuggle someone out of the country. Like, they should have just had whatever that warehouse was. They could have put it in Queens or they could have put it in Long Island and just gone there. There was no need to go to China. Like, it was just superfluous.
Yeah.
Especially since Netflix, like, it's not like they're going to be, opening this in Chinese theaters and they need to show the Chinese box office, hey, we got a Chinese scene. It's just random.
Yeah. And completely stupid with, there are no vantage points or anything like that where they can spot us and everything.
There's a warehouse right next to you. There's all these windows.
Yeah.
I saw the exact same thing. Not only that, there's a beggar sitting outside with holding a cup out for money in a place where there's no foot traffic.
Yeah.
Like, why would he?
Why would he be there? And for a moment, I thought.
That whole setup is so stupid.
For a moment, I thought perhaps that's Shang-Chi.
Mm-hmm.
Running his own operation against the Hand, but it also went nowhere.
Yeah. Maybe there's a director's cut where all of this makes sense. But yeah, it was pointless. That whole scene in China was like, I was like excited if they were going to go to China.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, wait, this is the Defenders. Like, this is supposed to be all set in New York and Hell's Kitchen, right? So I don't know why they're leaving the country now. And then doing it in such a bad way where it doesn't make any sense.
I thought that the series would continue in China for a big chunk and not just for the...
It was just like in one episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pointless. So, hence, bad script issues, right? I mean, like, really, I don't know who plot this thing out and who thought about that, but they could have achieved what they needed to, which was effectively to capture Gao in a much more efficient way and not wasted all that time, and lost a lot of credibility, I thought, with the way that the story was laid out.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we've got about 10 minutes left, I guess, when it comes to making this an hour long episode. So
let's do some positive.
How do you want to wrap up?
Should we lay out some things we liked?
Yeah. Okay, you can start.
Colin Wing was awesome, and Ward Meacham was amazing. I mean, what the guy that was the only person that got a definitive character arc with a beginning, a middle, and an end. He ends up in the same place he started, but he's essentially become a new person. You know, he has to dial down his act, and he has to take responsibilities for the things he does. And I think Colleen as well. But I don't like the whole, you know, it was love that changed her, that changed her views. That felt a bit odd.
I think Colleen's story, as well as the love angle, was, I think, to your point at the start about loss. You know, because she believed in this, you know, she came from a place where she, you know, lost her grandfather and kind of needed to rebuild her life. And then she clung. Is that a word? Clung? She held on to the hand as her way of getting her life back together. That was what she believed in. That's what she pledged herself to. And then when she found out what it actually was, because she also didn't believe what Danny was telling her about the hand. You know,
if we mirror the story, the hand was her Kon Lun. It was her capital Sipti of heaven.
Yeah, it gave her a place of refuge when she needed it, you know. But then when she does go into the bowels of it and, you know, finds out what's really going on, and she sees the truth of what Baku is willing to do, that's when she realizes, you know, that's when the truth hits her in the face, effectively. And then she has to cope with that. So I thought, you know, her story was good. She got a little bit frustrating at times. She was with her stubbornness. But you're right in the sense that she had like a full story arc, which was good. And the same with Ward. I thought Ward was a very interesting character. I mean, he was a real dick in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
And so it was hard to feel sympathy for him. But yeah, he went through a lot, that poor guy, and maybe deservedly so. But I think where he gets to in the end is like you want to be on the Ward fan club. You know, you want to support him,
yeah.
At least going forward. So
yeah, it's sad what they did with Joy in the end, because I think it would have worked much better if Joy went off to have her horse breeding farm. Instead of conspiring to kill Danny with Davos, I felt that was a bit off.
That kind of also happened way too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but that's also the difference between a happy ending and, like, I guess, continuing the story.
Yeah.
Because in the end, like, who gets the happy ending? I think only Ward, right?
Ward gets the happiest ending of all, yeah. Sees his father burn.
Yeah, like, they... But I thought David Wenham did a good job as the father. I thought he was great. I thought he made me nervous just watching those scenes for what was going to happen next. So he was awesome. And I also loved, I really appreciated when he's like talking to Joy and, you know, putting on his good face and saying, you know, I've always wanted to go to Australia. And I'm like, haha, David Wenham. He's Australian.
Amazing. That's good.
Yeah, so I thought he was good. I thought I don't even know the actor who played Ward, but I thought he did a good job as well. Like he starts off all like so business professional and like, you know, Upper East Side. He goes through his junky phase and he just, you know, that's done very convincingly. And then comes back and like you said, he's able to come full circle in the end, only in a much happier way. So he did a great job. Yeah, so you know, those performances really kept me going. I thought Danny Rand, so Finn Jones, was pretty good, but
it could have been better.
But he could have been. I mean, again, in terms of casting, I think he was. I think for the way Iron Fist exists in the comics, he was an okay casting choice.
Yeah,
I kind of wanted someone a little bit more like Finn Jones, like, you know, to me comes across as a little bit soft, only because, you know, I'm also projecting the characters he's played before. So playing Loras Tyrell in Game of Thrones, and so he comes across as a pretty boy. Yeah. I wanted Danny Rand and Iron Fist to be a little bit more hard-edged, a little bit more, I don't know how else to describe it. Like, not so much of a hippie, maybe. And that's hard, because I know that he's a surfy California dude in, like, the cartoon, right? So, in, you know.
I think that softness is what, if they would have cast a much harder character in that show, I think it wouldn't have worked as well, because it would have looked stupid if somebody like that. There's the scene in the park in the first episode where they talk about the purpose in life, and he says to defend Khan Lun and honor the sacrifice of, and I forgot the name of the dragon, the Undying. Mm-hmm. And through Finn Jones's hippie attitude and softness, it sounds more believable, as if they have gotten a sterner looking character. Who maybe, I mean, it's a duty of the director to make the scene work, but I think it wouldn't have worked as well with a more angular character.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, and you know, I think you've convinced me there. There needed to be that contrast between Ward, who is effectively that angular character, and Danny, who was kind of the soft baby face.
I often thought about if it would have been interesting to have the character, the actor who plays Ward, play Danny Rand.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes tried to switch them out in my mind.
Yeah, and you're right. I don't think it would have worked as well. Danny Rand. You're making me think. It's like, now, thinking music, please.
Yeah. You know, I'm so sorry. I'm trying to find, because I don't want to see the 13 hours of my life wasted. I'm trying to find.
Yeah, I'm trying to hold on to anything. Yeah. No, I think it was worth watching for sure. I think it was a hard slog to get through the first couple of episodes, but once you get past episode 4 or 5, once the hand shows up and you start seeing what the point of this whole story is, it makes a whole lot more sense. And it's very watchable, you know?
Yep.
Cause once I started watching it, I effectively binged it, and I could just keep going. And it wasn't like I was super bored at any stage. So, you know, it was very compelling to watch.
Yep.
It's just that there's a lot of kind of like flaws in the way it was, in the way the thing was put together. So if you can look past those, I think overall you're still going to get a pretty good story. And I think it's just the creative team involved. They maybe tried to do something a little bit new.
Yep.
It's not the same creative team that does all these shows. And I don't know if they've, you know, this is maybe something we need to look into. Do they have the same level of, honey is the word, do they have the same level of governance that the MCU has in terms of Kevin Feige, who's overlooking this whole thing and making sure that everything lines up and all, you know, that there's a certain level of quality even. I don't know if these shows have that in the Netflix universe, or whether they're giving the creative teams a lot more latitude to do what they need to do or what they want to do to make their shows.
They have much more leeway. But I heard the showrunner of Iron Fist is also going to do the Inhumans show.
Right.
So
that doesn't give me a lot of faith in Inhumans.
It's going to be interesting.
And that's going to be a TV series, right? Yep. That's not a miniseries. That's going to be on ABC?
Yeah, I think it's on ABC.
On Network? Okay. Because again, Inhumans has this is potentially something we can talk about more in the next episode. But Inhumans has a lot of potential for what it could be.
Yeah.
And I think we've discussed a bit before, right? It's effectively Game of Thrones with mutant powers.
Yeah.
So if they play it that way, it would be soup. It would be an awesome show.
Yeah, great characters, great visuals.
Yeah, and they could really do some awesome world building, you know. Whereas, you know, if they if we, you know, a lot of what we complained about today with Iron Fist was the lack of world building when it came to Kun Lun. So if it's the same creative team and if they have the same gap, then yeah, I mean, that's not setting itself up for success.
Nah. Then the show's going to fall on its face.
Okay.
The back matter.
Yeah.
Explain.
All right. So I think we covered effectively like what we didn't like. We covered what we liked. Any other final closing thoughts?
Yeah, continuity error. I've mentioned it in my Iron Fist diary that at some point he mentions Lord, I forgot his name, and that's Yuti, that's the August personage in Jade that he recites earlier, the mayor of Kun Lun.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
So I want to know what's up with that.
I don't know.
That bothered me a lot.
Which episode is that in?
I think in episode 5, 4 or 5. He recites UT in 5 and then in 4 and then in 5 he recites Lord, the name I forgot. Right. And I thought, wait a minute, isn't that the name of UT also? And I Googled it and Google said I was right.
Well, then it must be true.
Yes.
So I guess there's much more to be explained. That's an Easter egg, if anything, I think. Because it kind of washed over my head. Like, I didn't even recognize that. So I just kind of just took all the names for granted.
You know, I complained about it loud to my coworker, and he said, what the fuck is a UT? And I, he's the mayor of Kun Lun.
Like, I don't know who's gonna know that. We didn't even realize, we didn't even see anyone else in Kun Lun except the monks who beat him up, you know. So, they've got a mayor. There's a town fire department and then the library, you know.
The library card. Imagine the late fees for the library card.
Oh,
it's,
man,
like 5 monks and 6.
No,
kids.
Not only that, it's like karma on your eternal soul. It's like, so you don't want to have your books in late, let me tell you. All right, cool. Well, on that note then, I think we can close our Iron Fist review.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to our rambling review. And yeah, I mean, at this stage, it was a spoiler review anyway, so yeah. We should put that in the front.
Consider it.
And so let us know what you think. If we've got our Twitter working now. It's at Asteroids In. So we can put that on the
in the show notes.
In the show notes, so we can get some. So if you have any feedback or have your own thoughts about watching Iron Fist, let us know.
Or write us at asteroidsinexile@gmail.com. Please.
Please. All right, cool. So thanks Martin.
Thank you,
and we'll be back in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah so Arkham. Much more to talk
and
about.
We are planning a live show, so we will let you know when that's going to be. See if we can tune in live. All right, goodbye.
It's got wiped already. Bye bye.